Hello and welcome to the podcast for episode 102 of the Outlander television series, Castle Leek. I'm Ronald D. Moore, executive producer and developer of the Outlander TV series, and I'm joined this week by the lovely and talented Terry Dresbach, our costume designer, and oh yes, by the way, my wife. Hello and welcome, Terry.
Hello.
This week, as you can see, we're beginning with main title. There's not traditionally a teaser in the show. That was just something we did for episode one with sort of a prologue that led into the show, and that felt natural. But typically, every week, we're going to start here.
Am I in a different spot every week?
Yeah, your credit fall. Your credit adjust. The credits kind of shift around week to week because we have different.
I liked being on the part where you were sewing up the body.
I thought that was
kind of funny.
It shifts around because of guest cast and how many credits there are in the main title. Another thing that shifts week to week that you're going to see coming up here is as we go to the Outlander logo and we go to the what we call the title card every week that gives the name of the episode as well as the writer and director credits, the music also shifts in time, or it also shifts week to week, and Barry writes us a different piece.
We are also joined by someone else.
Yes, Kulan, the magical dog.
Yes.
He eats like a goat, he runs like a frog. That's our dog.
He does.
Yes, he does.
And if I cough, don't anybody be alarmed. I have asthma, so I cough throughout podcasts.
Yes, she will cough a lot.
I'll cough a lot.
And the scotch this week is Buna Habane.
Don't say it.
Buna Habane 18, which I'm sure I'm nailing.
Just spell it out.
Anyway, here we are, Castle Leek.
God, it looks so great.
That's actually Dune, as we talked before on the previous podcast. This is the actual location at Dune. Our production designer, Gary Steele, brought in all the set dressing that you see here, the small huts, the forges, all that stuff was brought in by art department. We had to cover up various 20th century things like railings and plaques and so on. We also brought in a fair amount of dirt and cladding to sort of give the sense of a dirt floor out there. Actually, the courtyard of Castle Leek is a nice bright green.
You're not giving me any chance to talk.
Go ahead.
This is also one of the first times we saw extras. I think it's the first day we saw extras at all. We were just really finding our feet at this point.
Yeah, it was very early in the shoot.
Very early. And this was a big day for us because it was really the first time we'd had to actually get extras onto the set, which is always a really big deal. And it's so interesting to see it now compared to when we first started and how much we've learned.
This was a cold shoot, and somehow the days that we shot at the courtyard were particularly cold, and the mud was real.
Yeah,
you could see it raining in the shots.
The mud, that was also the day we learned about mud, because that was the day everybody was knee-deep in mud.
That shot there of Column up in the window is actually a visual effects shot. We added that in later.
Ah, there she is, Mrs. Fitz.
Mrs. Fitz, I love Mrs. Fitz.
God,
this is Annette.
She's amazing.
I love her. She's exactly what you sort of want Mrs. Fitzgibbons to be.
Yeah.
This whole scene is drawn pretty closely from the book, from Claire's arrival at Leek. You know, there was a greeting scene very much like that, and several lines of dialogue are drawn from the actual book.
You know, doing her costume was really incredible because she was Mrs. Fitz, and you just knew that this was who she was. She's like this tank that runs the entire deal, and look at her. I mean, her costume just... It decided what it was going to be. I mean, she's just formidable. Loving and warm, but, you know, she's going to run that castle and everybody in it.
And the infamous white dress, which really functions perfectly. I know, Terry, you had mixed feelings about the dress itself.
I hate this dress. Have you not talked about this dress?
I've said that you hated it, but they'll all be mystified.
I hate this dress, but at the same time, even I, when I watch it, go... I can buy the fact that the Highlanders would think she was wearing her shift. That's my favorite shot of the kilt right there.
Right there.
It's just so beautiful right there. The blue comes through in that shot really nicely. But, yeah, the dress is believable, and that was always the goal. And that's part of your job as a costume designer, is not just to make it look great, but to serve the story and to make sure that the audience or the characters in the story can believe what's going on. And I think we succeeded in that. And ultimately, that's more important.
Yeah, I mean, it really functions as something that you believe as 1940s and as theoretically a piece of undergarment.
Those are two time periods that costume-wise just couldn't be too far apart. So trying to figure out how to get a garment that would serve in both centuries was really a challenge.
Now we're about to transition here from the location back to our sound stages, which is a pretty smooth transition, I must say. I kind of believe that Castle Leek has a whole integrity in and of itself, because I don't think you sense the switch from location to stage, and you'll see it as they turn around here, and they go straight back into the hall.
I want to say about the kilt, about his plaid. Look at that. It's just so beautiful. We wove. I think at the end of the day, I think we've wove a few hundred meters of that plaid. We designed it ourselves. Designed to look in earth tones.
And now we're on the sound stages.
Yeah, that really did come out good. I love this. I love this.
Well, this is why, this was originally why I decided that they should visit Castle Leek in episode one, because I knew what we could do gags just like this, which was the fun of watching Claire walk down the halls in one century. And
it's great. It's just like when they drive up to the castle and you see the, when she sees herself next to the wagon. I love that.
There was a little bit more the shot at the head of the scene, which was just them coming into the scene and sort of introducing the set, but it kind of felt like you didn't need it. You could cut right to the chase and get in with them, you know, already with the witch hazel and so on in the fire. This is also obviously a set that's on our sound, was on our sound.
Yeah, this is Gary. This is Gary at his best. Our production designer, Gary Steele, my best friend. You know, everything you see, it's, you know, he built it, not everything in the whole show, but all of this. And it's just extraordinary because you, once again, you really believe it.
And then right here, this is all a prosthetic that the scars in Jamie's back take, 2 hours to apply, I think, on stage?
Wow.
It's at least an hour. It might be an hour and a half. It's a long, involved process because it's a big sheet that they have to meticulously apply.
Sam lying on his stomach on a massage table.
Yeah, and we go over and over. And then we'll clean. And still, over the course of a day, the edges will start to fray and
become visible. Well, you can't put, you know, it's really, really difficult if you're going to put any kind of costume over it, no matter how lightweight it is. It starts to mess with it, and it's really tricky. See, this is a good place where you see how her dress works. It really does look like, like a neutral garment. You can't really tell what it is, which ultimately serves us.
This is a key scene just also structurally going forward in the show, because those of you who know the book know that a tremendous amount is told in backstory. As Claire's character moves through the story, there's many, many scenes where people are telling her stories of what happened in the past, particularly Jamie. And there was a question, you know, he tells her the story in the book about the flogging at Fort William. He tells her quite a bit of his backstory in this first sequence. But I made a choice early on about, okay, when do we want to see the flogging? And I decided I didn't want to see the flogging here. I wanted to say he had been flogged because you clearly see the scars in the back. But I didn't want to give away that sequence yet. But I did want to show Jack Randall and his first encounter with Jamie and set up Jenny and set up Lollybrook. So I chose, okay, let's do that as the actual first flashback that we see. And so we come here to Lollybrook.
You know, it's really interesting because I've read the books, as many of you know, about a billion times myself, and part of my job is to keep Ron honest. And there are things that he's done that I don't even really notice, that they feel like the book, even though they're not necessarily done in the same order. It feels right.
That was important because you're trying to preserve. I love that shot particularly.
I love that shot too.
It's important to preserve the spirit and the feeling of the book, even when you're departing from a literal adaptation.
This is one of the first times we see how Sam decided to wear his kilt.
Well, this was Sam's first day.
Yeah.
This was literally Sam's first day on the show.
And this was his choice to wear the kilt that way. When I saw it, I almost had a heart attack, and it turned out to be pretty fantastic.
Sam is fond of saying that the first day he worked on the show, he got beat up.
Yeah, a lot.
He has a big fight, and then, you know, he has this beating coming up with Jack.
This was the first time that I saw the show and went, wow, this is going to be intense, and Tobias is fantastic. Fantastic in this scene.
I love the way, when he rips open Jenny's dress here, and the way he looks at Jamie. Well, they've seen the episode by the time they see the podcast. So when he rips open Jenny's dress here,
the face on and him, wait,
just right here, right when here. He says, "Really? Oh, yeah. That's interesting."
Yeah. And he's just so.
He's just holding her. He's like, oh. Yeah. And I love this.
When he cleans her face like a parent.
I love that.
Does that to a child, and then just tears open her dress.
And Laura Donnelly, who plays Jenny, and we'll see later on, you know, in the story, is just so good.
And that's Tobias's choice.
Yeah, that's Tobias.
The cleaning off the dirt off the face was not scripted. That's just what Tobias brings to the scene. This is such a disturbing scene.
It's very disturbing. And it plays very real.
It plays really real. And you just, because you look at it and you just kind of imagine. Imagine what it is for a brother to see this done to a sister. It's just horrific.
This location, we spent, you know, a fair amount of time discussing what Lollybrick would look like and how it would look. And
ooh, I haven't seen this. Oh, I've heard about this. Everybody's told me how horrible it is.
This isn't the most horrible one, dear.
Well, that's...
This is just... this is the easy one.
That's good.
This is the easy beating. Lollybrick, I was, in many people's imagination, was a smaller structure than this, but this felt right, and it looks right, and it's a distinctive looking...
And it looks just like our house.
It looks just like our house. It's an architecturally interesting house, so this became Lollybrick from now and forever after. Again, I talked in episode one about my obsession with the color of red and the Redcoats uniforms.
Oh, can I talk about that?
Yeah, please do.
For, I don't even know how long, a year, I have listened to Ron... make me watch every movie that ever had a red coat in it and rant about how it's the wrong shade of red. And if we do this, I have to make sure I have the right shade of red. Oh, I don't know how many times I've watched The Patriot. It's just appalling.
Oh, because and I picked out The Patriot to say, do not do this.
I know. Not just one time, about 50 million times. Yep. It's almost like I'm being, you know, my eyeballs are being forced to watch it so that he can tell me just one more time not to do that color. So we had to... weave the red so that it would be the Ron... We should just call it the Ron Moore
Red.
The
Ron Red, because I wanted a specific shade of red for those red coats.
Oh, my God,
you
were so painful.
Because when you go for that candy apple bad
color... Well, I understand, but,
color,
you, but here's
it
the
makes
trick.
Them, it makes them no longer villainous
but here's the
or
thing.
Strong.
Here's
it makes
the thing.
Them silly.
There are almost no costumes we rented on this show because they're just not available. We made almost everything. The one costume... on this show that is available to rent, that there are hundreds available to rent, are the red coat uniforms. Could we rent red coat uniforms? No, we could not rent red coat uniforms.
Not
we
on my
had
show.
To make them. The only costume we could have rented, we had to make.
That's right.
He doesn't go light because it's me.
Nope.
Don't anybody think he makes my life easier because I'm his wife. He makes it harder.
If I'm doing red coats, they're going to be cool red coats.
Oh, God.
They're going to be interesting red coats.
Yeah. You know what? The question is, if we hadn't told them that, would anybody have noticed?
Yeah, they
would have
been, oh, it's that stupid shade of crappy candy apple red, like in that piece
so,
of crap The Patriot.
You see this car? This car looks almost exactly like a car that Ron gave me for my birthday. Except mine's an MG, but it's about the same. Well, I guess not the same year, is it?
No.
No, mine's like 50s, 10 years older. Yeah. But I have a car that looks almost just like that. It's beautiful. Doesn't run.
Now, this scene is sort of probably in clear. Now, you can read that scene two ways.
Sorry.
That could literally be what is happening in the 20th century. You could also read it as Claire's imagination of what is happening in the 20th century.
I never thought of that. I always
you can read
see
it either
it as
way.
A flash, as a...
as reality.
Yeah, I see it as something that's happening in a parallel universe.
Yeah, you can read it either way as you
Isn't
look
that
at that scene.
I never thought about it as a parallel universe before.
Yeah.
But it really kind of is a parallel universe.
I mean, this scene is a particularly important scene in the development of the Jamie-Claire relationship. You know, he's shared a huge thing of his backstory. She breaks down. This is one of the few times that the character Claire literally breaks down.
It's true. You're
where
right.
it all comes... And it is in the book that is in
yeah.
this moment. In the book, she's sitting on his lap.
Yeah,
she
she's sitting on
down.
His lap. And,
and
she
I decided
into his
I didn't want to do that.
Why?
I thought it was... visually, it was going to look a little too weak, a little too vulnerable. I didn't understand why she would sit in his lap, and I just felt like this
well,
was
Well, she
better.
Doesn't sit in his lap. He pulls her down onto his knee.
And even that, I didn't think he should pull her in, because I wanted to play it more like Jamie reaches out to her in this moment, reaching out, not pulling her in. And there's this moment right here where they almost kiss... And this was all an editorial thing that Mikey and I, Mike O'Halloran, our editor, talked about a lot, was how long do you linger there in that moment when they might kiss? And it's very delicate stuff. It's almost like a frame one way or the other. If you hold it too long, it's like, oh, well, Jesus, kiss her already. And if you cut it too short, then there's no moment. So we played around a lot with exactly how long Jamie and Claire look at each other. This section right here is actually a pickup that we shot a couple of months later because we kind of needed to, we didn't
so
have this coverage.
Now.
Jamie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is early. This is before his hair grows out a bit. And
it's more than that. He's just different now.
This was also a beat that Diana, when I was showing Diana an early cut of this episode, she pointed out that we had dropped a line in here that she felt was really important for the fans. The line where Jamie says, you need not be scared of me as long as I'm with you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that had been cut just in
oh,
the...
Oh, and she made you put it back?
She didn't make us put it back. I mean, the thing about Diana, she never insists. She
I
just
use the wrong word, not make.
Well, it's only important because Diana's very generous about the show and very, like, Well, I think if you skipped a line there that fans might really miss, because that's an important line to them.
And they're right, I would have.
And then we kind of went, oh, okay, thanks. And then we went back in and we restored the line.
This is just one of my favorites. Look at this.
I love this whole sequence. This is so great.
This is like every kid's worst nightmare when their mother comes in and goes, get out of bed.
The music is great. It's just the fun of this whole scene. It's like literally reawakening in a different reality.
Yeah.
And Claire, what the fuck? Oh, yeah, this place.
Can you swear in the podcast?
I do.
You shouldn't.
I do.
There are people out there listening who find that offensive.
Really? People who watch this show?
Yes, there are people who watch this show. You know what?
If you're watching this show, you're watching the adult version, baby.
Oh, good Lord.
If I could swear on the Galactica podcast.
Look at her hair. I love it.
But it's this beat coming up here.
Yeah, this.
She has the bra.
And she just comes and takes away. I was on set that day, and Kat just
look at Kat's face.
So beautifully, like
look at Kat's
but
face.
She gave me that to eat. Yeah, it's like a little kid. I'm like, what?
Now this sequence.
I'm talking about this because this was incredible. This is great. Watch this. This is so lovely. What kind of corset is that? This is the only garment that we couldn't get rid of. We got rid of the stockings, you know. We got rid of the belt. We got rid of the watch. We got rid of everything. You couldn't get rid of the underwear. And we had to sell this idea that, you know, it's French, which covers a lot of territory. It's French. They wear all kinds of weird things. But this is such a vulnerable, vulnerable moment. I mean, she's... In this time, this would have been normal. You wouldn't have dressed yourself. Somebody would have dressed you. Now, this scene was hysterical because everybody, Ron included, insisted that we shoot this in real time, that we get them dressed. And
I said that. I know.
And I was like, are you sure? Do you know how long that takes? We shot this scene. It took about half an hour. You could hear people shifting behind the camera. They were like, I can't believe how long this takes. Editors, everybody was like, wow. And it gave everybody a new healthy respect. The shoes she put on are both... There's not a left foot or a right foot. They're both the exact same shoe, just like in the book.
There was a point in a couple of drafts where I was in love with the idea that Claire decided to keep her own shoes, that she put on shoes that had no left and no right, but she was going to wear her own shoes, and it was a way of kind of the character saying she was going to keep her feet in the 20th century, even though she was back in the 18th century. And the only reason that got dropped was Chris Albrecht at Starz said, well, if she's wearing 20th century shoes, wouldn't Gaylis Duncan look at them and go, those are 20th century. And I went, oh, shit.
That was another one of those things where, you know, in the book, I really, really wanted that. This incredible room column study, these walls Gary Steele had them hand-painted by an amazing muralist.
Yeah, those are, they look like tapestries.
Yeah, they're painted.
But they're actually hand-painted to look like fabric.
Oh, my gosh, there are the legs.
Now, the legs are actually, it's really... Gary's legs, and what they did is there are these multicolored, ridiculous-looking socks.
They're green and orange. They're these, like, weird
keys. They have, like, squares. They look like the Partridge Family bus.
Yeah.
For those of you, ask your parents. Who knows what that means. And he wears these socks, and then, but Gary's sort of, the way he walks was something he developed because you gave him specific shoes.
Yeah,
right?
We made shoes. We kind of cobbled those together. He and I, with all kinds of weird pieces of foam in them. That coat, by the way, we attempted to make something I'd never seen before. And if you look at it, this was a very personal design I did for him. Gary and I first started working together. Working with him was a pleasure. It's quilted linen. The idea was that this is a coat he wears in his private chambers and for his own comfort. He's infirm. He's in pain all the time. What would he want? And so that's lined with rabbit fur. The idea being that it would be just incredibly soft and gentle on the skin. His nerves are probably in pain all the time. And that the quilting of the linen would make it a warm garment. You'll never see this on column outside of his own personal chambers. It's his comfort garment.
I'll just go back to legs for a second. So there are these multicolored socks. No, it's okay. Multicolored socks that he wears. And then in visual effects later, we then sculpt in with CGI those sort of bowed legs. You know, and giving it texture and giving it that particular angle and to sort of sell the idea of his infirmity.
And for those of you who are wondering where does Clara get her clothes, you know, we've always just sort of figured out that, you know, it's a castle. Mrs. Fitz runs the castle. you know, somebody dies, somebody moves away, somebody whatever, Mrs. Fitz digs up, you know, a small wardrobe for Claire. Contrary to what people think, there's only about, Claire only has about 6 outfits. We've just been very clever about how we mix and match them.
And you can see right there, we flash back to Frank talking to her about interrogation techniques. I like the idea that Claire, as a character, draws upon her relationships with Frank about, you know, how to have cover stories, how to lie to people under interrogation. It was another way, again, of always reminding the audience of Frank. Anytime that I could find a way to remind the audience that Frank exists and that that's who she's trying to get back to, I grabbed it, because it was really important to sort of, you know, keep with the idea that there's a reason why Claire doesn't want to just stay in this place, that she has a man to go back to that she really loves and cares about.
I'm going to have to watch this again. I'm not seeing 1 ounce of it. I haven't seen this yet.
I know, she's just like...
I'm not seeing anything. This mural, I just cannot... This whole room is 4 walls just painted all the way around. It's just one of the most extraordinary sets I've ever seen in my life.
It's also the same set as Claire's room.
Yeah.
It's the exact same set, and what they did, Gary built it...
I don't think you should tell me.
...modularly that you could swap the windows out and move them around, but the fireplace is the same, and this is the actual... But you never guess, because he's covered it with these big hanging tapestries that hide the fact that it is the same set.
Excuse me. If you pay attention to the costumes, you will start to track. I know some of you are watching this multiple times. You can start to track Claire's clothes, and if you really add it up, you know, she's got about 4 bodices and about 4 skirts and I think 2 dresses, not including the couple of special occasion dresses Mrs. Fitz gives her. But... we just put them together so many different ways, which is, you know, for you Americans, you'll understand the garanimal concept, which is what I call Claire's clothes. Garanimals for the 18th century. It's all about everything is made to go with everything so that, you know, 4 costumes become 24 costumes.
This scene of Colm interrogating Claire for the first time and then is kind of cobbled together from dialogue from the book of their first meeting and actually... other meetings that they had at dinner and other points, and so I sort of concentrated some of that up front. That brief shot right there of Claire traveling down the staircase in Castalia is probably the only thing that we actually shot interior at Dune, was that spiral staircase.
It looks exactly like the spiral staircase in our house that we go up and down every single damn day.
This is the rampart at Dune Castle.
I love this.
There's 2 camera left there on that shot. It's a very steep drop off, so there's like a big safety net there to keep Claire from falling.
Oh, we had to harness her.
You had to harness her in certain shots.
A harness on her.
Not in this shot.
Not this shot. This is my favorite top. I love this top. I just love this. That velvet is like, here she's harnessed.
Yeah, there she's harnessed.
Oh, see this.
And this was something I added that's not in the book, was this thing with Dougal and Hamish. It's a lovely moment. And in the book, you'll see coming up in the scene in the Great Hall where she's wondering about Hamish's parentage, was something that the character internally was thinking about but didn't state outwardly. And I thought it would be interesting that she said it outwardly and it became a mistake. But to set that up, we had to kind of establish this relationship.
But it also makes him, it's playful. It's seeing Dougal, you get a humanity to him, and... that's really lovely, and it makes his character not one-dimensional. There's so many times where you have, like, the bad guy, and he's never nice to anybody, and it's not true, you know? Have fun with kids. It's great. Oh, this is great.
This is great. I really like the way John Dahl, who shot this episode as well as episode 1, John set this up in such a great way, because you're entering this world with her. Like, she steps into this archway, and then, boom, you're into the Great Hall. This is... a practical set we built on stage. This is probably the biggest set I've ever built, including the hangar deck at Battlestar Galactica. This is an enormous set.
Oh, look at this. This is amazing. You know, Gary made all that stone. It's just...
Yeah, all the stone was, like I said, in the first episode was modeled, was cast from molds made from Castle Dune.
So great.
All the food is real.
The
food was
There's
all baked
rabbits.
In our own
There's
kitchen.
All sorts of crazy stuff on there.
There's real, I mean, I remember, I'll probably post it online at some point, all this fire is real on the set, and most of the set is lit naturally.
Yeah.
And we had to do a fire test, because there's a lot of candles,
a lot of candles,
of fire.
And if you're standing
in
the wrong place, the candles drip on you.
Yeah.
I'm really always sorry that we don't see that more of Letitia's costumes.
A couple of these angles on the dinner look like Dutch master paintings
to me. Yeah,
they're
do.
So gorgeous.
This is when we first start seeing the knits. really. Letitia's wearing this beautiful knit collar that we got. And we really, you know, that was an idea driven by actually living in Scotland, that it's so cold and so chilly and you're just in those castles and you go, they just wouldn't, you know, be that exposed. They'd cover everything up. And at that point, no one wanted to cover up Claire. That was an ongoing discussion. But I covered up everybody else I could because it was, everybody froze. Yeah, right, that there. Collar there was beautiful.
And what did you call those? And what did we call those?
What did we call them? Mrs. Fitz Knits Bits?
Mrs.
Fitz Knit Bits.
Because you were saying...
Yeah, because Mrs. Fitz knit everything for everybody. She was a busy, busy, busy woman. There was a lot of knitting going on. But it gave texture and it gave depth and it helped us believe this world that it's cold in Scotland. You know, we really did, you know, when I got to Scotland, I had a different perception of 18th century costumes than I did after I lived here. And you just kind of throw it all out the door and go, oh, you need wool, you need heavy, warm clothing. You'd die here without all this. And our actors were, once we put them in authentic clothing, were quite warm outside and did the dead of winter riding around horses in the rain. Because it's just that layers and layers of authentic wool give you protection like nobody else, nothing else. Oops.
It is drawn from the book that Claire gets a little whacked on Colin's rash. So I worked that into the scene as part of a deliberate sort of attempt by him to wheedle more information out of her. And then this was also a good scene to sort of establish the relationship between the brothers. There's a lot going on in this particular scene that sets up a lot of different relationships as the show goes forward.
You can also start seeing, this is where we start really bringing in a lot of texture, a lot of tweeds and wools and thick. If you look at Colm, his costumes and Dougal, you can start to see the details in the fabrics a lot more when you come interior.
It's also a good place where we're really showcasing the way we're using light in the show. You know, there's natural light coming in through the windows, and then the rest of the scene is lit entirely by candlelight or the fires. It was important to me that we tried to de-emphasize sort of, you know, quote-unquote Hollywood lighting, that we're not filling every shadow, that we're not giving everybody specific key lights, that we're not afraid that things fall off into shadow here and there, that you really feel a sense of truth of like, okay, what would it really be like in this room in the middle of the day? They would have all this stuff lit. They would have candles and they'd have fires and they'd have torches and there'd be light coming in through the window. And how would it feel? It would feel like this, not just sort of a big... To me, I don't like the sort of golden, glowy kind of romantic view of the past. I like this sort of idea of this is as close as we can kind of get visually to the way it probably really did look.
So those glasses that everybody's holding, I know there's been a lot of discussion and debate about those glasses. And Gina, our set decorator, who is meticulous and quite talented and quite an expert, did all the research, and those are indeed authentic glasses. And no, they wouldn't have had to have been pewter.
And
see the
Hamish.
Dogs? Can you guys see that lump on the floor is a dog?
I know, the dogs
amazing
are
amazing wolfhounds.
And they come back.
See
they
that
come
bird?
You on see top that? Of the pie?
Yeah, there's an actual bird.
Right there.
Because the cooking was based on 18th century cooking. And so, you know, you're seeing all kinds of animals in their original skins and feathers.
Oh, eels and fish and
all kinds of crazy stuff.
After about 6 hours on the set, it gets
like
a bit fragrant.
Did I not see that rabbit anymore?
It's like, okay, can we move the rabbit off?
Rabbit head. Ah, Angus.
I love Angus.
I'm sorry. I appear to have made an error.
And of course, the thing with Hamish and Hamish's true parentage is something is actually a thread that pays off later into the story. But I like just touching on it here and just sort of setting it in motion and not really spending a lot of time trying to explain it. But it's just another of the little threads that sort of are woven through this episode.
I've got to get out of here before I say something I shouldn't. Look at all those candles back there. Those candles are unbelievable.
Oh, that candelabra in the background in particular drips a lot. Like in some of these shots, you can see just wax
just
pouring off of those candles. And I love all the smoke coming off the candles.
Oh, it was pretty smoky on that set.
It's very smoky. It got really hot on that set on occasion because you'd have all this fire going at the same time.
much they look alike there. It's really awesome. The size of that fireplace, too.
I like the way Kat plays this, too, because you know she's a bit wasted, but she's not overdoing it. It's just enough to kind of, yeah, okay.
Well, that part where you know that you're a little tipsy?
Yeah, you're just like trying to get out of the room.
But if you're suddenly, you know, plunged back into another century, the tipsy's got to have a whole other meaning. Oh, look at that. I remember this
day. That's all real. Oh, and right there, John Dahl's daughters.
Yes, John Dahl's twin daughters. John Dahl's
twin daughters.
John and I have worked together for 25 years. I did his first movie. Worked with him for years and years. Love him dearly.
This kitchen is based on the real kitchen at Castle Dune. It really has those pass-throughs right there. You don't see the hearth in this particular shot, but this the whole floor plan here was something
that's
very...
That's how I make my oatmeal.
Yes.
Just it like actually that. Is. And this is going to be the kind kitchen that's kind of my reaction house.
To the oatmeal.
I
know.
Yeah, well, I am actually a very good cook. Don't make it sound like I'm not. But this is the kitchen that I would have in my dreams. Really. We need to have this kitchen.
This giant kitchen.
Yeah, but with the
as long as we can have all these servants.
No, we're not having service. And cooking over the open flame. We could dress our kids up in these costumes.
This is the front of Dune Castle. Again, we put all these structures out there. If you go to Dune today, it doesn't have all these little pieces.
So it's the first time we see her in another costume. Same skirt, though. You'll see a lot of repeats there. We really want it to be believable. You know, it's interesting because... You actually need costumes sometimes to show the changing of days, especially in a show like this where we, our Highlanders, wear the same thing day in and day out. You need a way to pass time. And we used Claire to tell us that it was a different day than the day before. And
that's all real. This is a real pasture outside the real Castle Dune. This is no CGI
Gary
here.
Put that.
Yeah, we built this stable.
Yep.
I love this whole little beat here. This is all straight from the book.
Yep.
I'm so sorry about that.
On a side note, how did you decide who got the sort of bonnets and who got the tricorn hats?
Well, none of our guys have tricorn hats.
Yeah, why is that? Did you just how did you make that decision?
Hats are tricky. Hats can be very, very distracting, especially a tricorn hat. Especially for a modern audience, you have to be really careful. You have to have it be authentic. But at the same time, you have to not have the audience staring at the hat instead of the actor's face.
So did you decide that all of our guys, our quote-unquote Highlander guys, would wear bonnets and then townspeople would wear hats or something like that?
Well, townspeople tend to wear hats more than Highlanders. You're riding on a horse in a tricorn hat is tricky to keep it on your head. A merchant, a guy in town, is more likely to wear them. And we didn't, you know, bonnets came off and on. We kind of gave them to the actors and let them wear them as they wanted to. So a lot of that was a real personal choice on their part. Hats are a difficult thing, you know.
This scene is drawn for the book. This was originally, and it was scripted to be out in the pasture as a picnic, but it rained like cats and dogs.
Oh my God, it rained so hard
you
that day.
You can catch it. So you can see right there, it's raining like mad outside. Oh. And it kind of came and went, but it really rained pretty hard through
most
of the day.
You know, and here's the thing for the costume department, is every single day it's like, oh no, it's raining, what do we do? You know, that means that either the actors will start out wet or they're not, you know, they're not going to be wet. How do you do it? Are you going to keep it under an umbrella? You can't do that. How do you do continuity of raindrops on the clothes? It's impossible. So we're very happy when they do something like, oh, look, we'll put him inside.
This is another storyteller scene where he tells in the book, I condensed several stories into just a few here. And this was a choice to decide, okay, this was not a place we're going to do a flashback. That the point of the scene was not so much seeing the backstory of him, you know, eating grass, or even the backstory of his escape from Fort William and the sergeant getting shot and any of that. It wasn't important to see that. What was important to sort of just pick up the chemistry between Claire and Jamie and see that she's kind of becoming somewhat interested, fascinated by this guy who is gentle and interesting and just kind of telling her stories of his life and just kind of condensing
it
down.
Well, she needs to have somebody to get information from, too, and figure things out.
And it's her friend. This is her truly her first friend in this world.
Another thing is her knit mitts, not knit bits, her knit mitts. In the 18th century, women did wear mitts. They were usually made out of, well, you can find lots of research, they're made out of silk often. So this is a place where we went, well, if you lived in Scotland and it was freezing cold, you wouldn't wear one out of silk, which was hard to come by, and wool was easy to come by. And so it was easy for us to decide that in Scotland they would have had them made out of wool. It also just sells, again, the environment, which is what our goal was.
You can really see the rain coming down out there. But ironically, when she's about to leave this scene, she's going to walk outside. And of course, when we went out to shoot her and Rupert, it stopped raining. So the rain, I mean, it's just one of those things.
Four seasons comes all in one day.
And Jamie in a dangerous kilt moment.
Now, this is before we really got to put, if I may, Ron.
Please.
We were putting knit bits on Claire around her neck. Because this is back to the old argument of how much cleavage does one show on the lead actress discussion. I, at this point, was fighting for less because it didn't make sense that we were putting warming items on her arms and not on the rest of her. And you will see how that argument goes as the show progresses.
I never cared. I was like, put her in whatever you wanted to put her in.
Well.
Why'd you tell me?
Did I?
Yes.
Thank you.
No, you did care, and we had arguments about it.
That's no answer.
Way back when. No?
No.
Lied.
Oh.
No, we did not. It was an argument we had about a sketch a long time ago.
No, it wasn't.
No. She's had a lot of scotch.
I have not.
Old Alec, who actually we don't get to see as much as I kind of thought we would.
He's a lovely character.
Great character, great actor, and yeah, I wish we'd use him a little bit more.
I love old Alec. Look at that rain. There you go. God, it was just pissing. It's so interesting because, you know, this seems so long ago, and this is our, you know, we were introducing the costumes to, at this point still, to our actors, to our directors, to everybody, you know, everybody's dealing with stomachers and bum rolls and, you know, why does her hips look so wide, and, you know, everybody's getting used to the silhouette that I think everybody's really grown accustomed to now.
Yeah, see, here it's not raining anymore, because we shot this at a different time of day.
Or 5 minutes later.
5 minutes later. Yeah, I mean, this is going way back for us. We're sitting here now in August talking about this, and this was all shot last October.
Yeah.
And it's been a while. We're here.
Well, look at the leaves.
Yeah.
The
we're leaves, here in Scotland now. I mean, as we record this podcast, we're in Scotland.
Yeah, and those leaves are not turning colors.
Nope.
But they're about to. We're only a month from this.
A month away. Well, this is why I decided we had to switch the seasons of the book, because there was no way we were going to be able to pretend that Scotland in the fall was actually Scotland in the spring, you know.
No,
you
just, not with those colors out there.
Yeah, you weren't going to get away with it.
But the trick is, too, is that, you know, when Ron made that decision, I certainly understood it, but it put us into a whole different view of things in terms of costumes. Like the white shift dress suddenly had to be something in fall. This was an old blanket. My crew fought tooth and nail to have me not use that shawl because it was literally moth-eaten. I just love that piece. Look at that. It's just great. It's real. Just because something was moth-eaten didn't mean you wouldn't have worn it in the 18th century.
This whole little bit with Rupert, you know, and talking about Angus and all that. Actually, that was all contributed by Ira Bear, who's our number two writer on the show, who I worked with way back in Star Trek and fortunate to have work with me on Outlander. And Ira contributed a lot to the development of Rupert and Angus as sort of these somewhat comic relief but endearing characters, and a lot of their dialogue goes to him.
This is so long ago, it's so interesting to see it now. You know, we were way back when in all sorts of discussions about, would you wear your kilt, you know, inside the castle? Would you wear your coats? And, you know, me having to say to everybody, no, it's not now. You don't throw your jacket on a chair and walk around in your shirt sleeves. It was a much more formal world. People went fully dressed. And also, it was cold, so you wanted to be fully dressed. But we were finding our way with all of this at this point. Many, many discussions about, would I wear this inside? Yes, yes.
Now, here she's humming Run, Rabbit, Run from the first episode. And then it transitions.
Here's the stomacher.
There's the stomacher. And then this is going to transition into a needle drop of back to sort of music from Run, Rabbit, Run. I liked the idea of bringing 20th century music into the past, but the idea was to bring it in through Claire, that this is music she remembers. This is music that's her touchstone.
a quiet sense of pleasure in touching growing things once more. Felt the satisfaction of helping them thrive.
Ah, that's her first really great knit piece. Ah, there she is.
Enter Galus Duncan.
Can I just talk about how beautiful that knit piece is, both of them?
Thanks for the warning, though, but I do know those mushrooms are poisonous.
Look at her.
Who's this you're planning to do later?
And talk about Lottie Verbeek, who plays Galus, loves to play with her costume.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that shawl, when she turns around, you'll see there's a hole in the back of the shawl, which is actually her head's supposed to go through, and it's sort of supposed to wrap around here. But Lotta likes to play with her clothes. You always have to give her something. You have to give her a string. You have to give her something. She even talks about it. And at one point, she was trying to step through the hole, that one right there, that should have gone around her. Her head should have gone through, and was trying to wear, I don't know what she was going to do with it, but she was trying to step into it, and I had to say, okay, enough. Enough already. But it's fantastic to see somebody play with their clothes like that, and to make it into a character. She really appreciates what costumes mean and what they can do for a character, and I really fully support an actor using that kind of thing to develop who they are. It's interesting, the two of them in this scene, they both have very, very distinctive costumes and distinctive looks. That there's the hole. There's that crazy
hole. Where head's supposed to go through.
Where head's supposed to go through.
My favorite line coming up here, just because of the way Lotta delivers it. They say I'm a witch. I love that. Uh-huh. That kills me every time I hear it. She's so great. She is Galus. I remember the first time. I met her for the first time in your office, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, as soon as I walked in, I was like, oh my God, well, that's
Galus. Well, it's really interesting. I have sketches of Galus that I did long before Lotta was cast, and they look remarkably like her. She just is that character.
She really is. It's such a great, interesting relationship
between
these two.
Yeah, the two of them, they like each other so much.
Okay, and then this is the hall. Again, and this is, well, sort of the judgment. A lot of discussion early on about, you know, how much of this scene was going to be in Gaelic and how much was not. And I just decided, I really pushed for putting all this in Gaelic, not caring what the subtitles were, not caring what the translation was. Just, again, be with Claire's point of view, and you kind of get it. And Lotta, or Galus, rather, translates enough of it to understand the basics of what's going on, but you didn't need to understand every word. Even when Jamie gets up and makes his big speech, it's not important to know exactly what he says. What's important is the way he says it and the reactions of the people around him.
And this costume that you see on Claire, and it seems like, oh my gosh, she's got something else. You will see that costume again in, you know, episode 11. You will see that bodice. This dress of Galus is there just isn't a Florida to top shot on this. It is an amazing dress. I call it her moth dress. And there are two strings that come down the front that she just plays with and toys with and messes with. But the dress has incredible sleeves, and it just really defined Galus for me. It's sexy and kind of odd. Interesting fact about Galus is that Lotta and I decided early on to not use a corset on her. We really wanted it to be that men were looking at her and going, I don't think she's wearing a corset. And women would look at her and go, she's not wearing a corset. But she is the one person who is from a different century and can say, I'm not going to do this. I don't care. I'm going to break all the rules. So we broke a lot of rules with her.
And enter Lyra.
It's Leary, is it?
Leary.
Are we still debating it?
No, it's Leary.
Okay.
Yeah, when we see the name in the book, there's a lot of
There's everybody.
Leohair.
And Leary. That's what I always thought it was.
Long. We called her in the writer's room. We just referred to it as Long Hair.
Oh.
Yeah, where's Long Hair? Okay, there's Long Hair.
She's really an amazing little actress.
Oh, I love Nell. She's great. It's a great cast, top to bottom. I mean, it's hard to... It's remarkable. It's one of those things.
And all lovely. You know, you can hear that kind of thing. You know, people always say that in Hollywood, sort of a deal. But they really, really are. They really are. We don't have a prima donna among them. They're just all delightful people.
It reminds me of Galactica in that sense. I mean, it's the same kind of spirit among the cast, the same commitment to the show.
And it really does become family.
And it really does become family.
It's, as a matter of fact, it's time for another drunken sleepover. We tend to have, we have people over for drunken sleepovers. Yes. Our house has like 7
Make of that what you will. Yes.
Oh, God.
This was an important scene because it's such a memorable scene from the book of Jamie taking the beating for her.
Yeah, it's great. Well, it's when you really discover who he is.
Yeah, this is him. This is the hero moment. Because up until now, what has he really done in the story? He's been beaten up a lot.
Yeah, we don't really know anything
about
him.
He's like tended some horses. He's kind of a nice guy. And this is a fairly like, whoa, why is he doing this kind of beat? And it's truly a selfless act. Mm-hmm. He barely knows her.
Yeah. You knew you could have done a reshoot and shown us that whole dress.
I'll put that on my list of things I should have done.
You're supposed to check with me.
I should have checked with you.
That, you can't really see it again, but that coat of columns, we were playing with how do we make a Scottish version of 18th century clothing, and we took lace and dyed it and painted it to look like, as I said, the metallic forest, bottom of a forest floor. So we did a lot of these kinds of interesting painting techniques and turning something that we traditionally know as 18th century costume or clothing into Scottish 18th century clothing.
We did reshoot this. We added a little bit here with Murtaugh and Jamie because as we got deeper into the show, I felt like we had not quite cemented the idea of Murtaugh early enough. So during editing on the first couple episodes and then doing some pickups and reshoots, I wanted to really sort of emphasize the audience that Murtaugh actually is a very important character in the story. So we added a couple little interchanges there between Jamie and Murtaugh.
It's such a crazy scene, too, because these guys are friends. You know?
I love the way they play this.
They love the way it's just really wonderful.
And John Dahl and I talked about this a lot. Yeah. That the beating is not anger and the beating is not sadism. These guys like each other.
Well, this is just business.
This is business, and I love Rupert. I mean, what's interesting is Rupert looking up to Dougal. And Rupert, you'll notice, starts looking at Dougal like, really?
Can I stop?
Do I have to keep doing this?
And people start getting uncomfortable.
Like, right there. And look at that. Blinks. All Graham does is just look down. It's an interesting scene because the stakes are really just Jamie. And it's just all about sort of talking about the social mores of the time and what people thought was acceptable. And then you're saying, okay, this is acceptable, but within that, something else is going on.
Yeah. And
what's going on with Dougal?
Right. And why are we doing this? And he's like, you can see Rupert's face is like, do I really have to keep on?
And then in the shoulder,
isn't that so that he can try to take him down?
Yeah, well, it's to try to get this over with. It's like, okay, now I've really hurt him. Can I stop already? One more time.
Yeah. And he's like, wait a minute, this isn't just the normal business here.
And again, I like it especially, too, because we've set up that Rupert is one of the guys that's keeping tabs on Claire.
Yeah.
So it's not as simple as just saying, oh, he's a bad guy, he's a guard. Well, there's also this relationship, and you start realizing that Rupert, he's not a bad guy, and he doesn't really want to do this, but he's also being a, you know.
Yeah.
And again, we picked up this little beat with Murtaugh and Jamie.
Little bit more going on here. Rupert's not feeling so happy.
And what did you call that big blanket across his legs?
Oh, it's a fur pelt. It was just, again, you know, the idea being that, you know, he's uncomfortable and fur is soft against the skin and warm, and that he's always that Colm is always in pain, and when you live in pain like that, see, there's that trim I was talking about. When you live in pain like that, even your nerve endings are just kind of raw all the time. So anything we can do to add a little comfort to his life.
This next thing was scripted, and it was from the book. It was supposed to be outside in the courtyard, but we just decided, you know, I think it was production reasons. We just needed more scenes in the interior. There's the hearth. You see the enormity of the hearth in the kitchen.
And we just never saw that dress.
And this scene did have the leeches. Those of you who are fans of the book will know that this was the leeches on the eye scene, but the leeches did not work. The licorice leeches and the bladders prosthetic and CGI. And at a certain point, I'm looking at this in editing and going, you know what? That's not what this scene's about. Let's just dump the leeches and move on.
Oh, we tried everything.
Oh, it was just it was one of those things that you thought was
going
to work.
At one point, somebody came racing into our office going, do you guys have any black felt? Because they were going to try to make leeches out of black felt.
Oh,
one kind of fabric we don't have.
It was just one of those things. Oh, they can be CGI leeches. Well, but we need like a practical bladder to go over his eye that can go down with the swelling. And you spend countless hours discussing this kind of crap. And then eventually you just cut it because it's just too difficult. And it didn't work.
Well, and that's the thing. It's the same thing with costumes. There are, you know, and I know I'm a fan of the books, you know, there are things that really work on the printed page that when you actually try to put them in on film, it just doesn't work the same way. And you have to be okay with that. You just do.
Yeah, you have to move on. You have to decide creatively what's important.
And yeah, what's the story?
What's the story?
What tells the story?
That's really important.
That's our most important master.
And other things are grace notes. You know, the leeches, if they had worked, would have been a nice grace note. But that would have been it.
It'd be nice if you were able to put a little flower dress on Claire instead of just a linen shift. But, you know, it just doesn't. Sometimes things just don't work on screen the same way they can work in your own imagination. And that's a hard thing. And it's a hard thing for people. I understand that.
Because this scene is not about leeches. This scene is about this.
Yeah.
This scene is about...
The two of them.
The two of them. And I love that little beat of Lyra.
Yeah. And that Claire's still like, oh, you have a girlfriend.
You have a girlfriend. Isn't that cute? And there's a part of her that's like, oh, that's a shame. But, you know, I got to get back to Frank. But the key thing here that, you know, Mikey O really... The button on the scene is the important part. It's right. It's not the Lyra shot. It's right here. It's this Jamie and the little sigh. Like, okay.
I got a good deal with her.
Back to her, you know?
All right. It's not really what I want.
I did come up with this whole bit of the tinker coming to get Claire.
No. This is it. See, this is the best costume. Look at this. That's that same velvet top that we've seen before. And... A brown skirt, but this is that mink collar. It is just an extraordinary piece of clothing. It's just a round mink cowl, but it is so elegant and so beautiful and yet so believable. Look at that. It's just stunning.
Yeah, I love that collar.
It's just gorgeous.
The whole addition of this thing with the tinkerer and, you know, earlier on Colm saying, you know, something Petrie will be here in 5 days, and he might be able to take you back to Inverness. As we were working through the story, part of the problem from translating from page to screen was you wanted to sort of identify with Claire's need to get out of here, and you wanted sort of a clock on it, you know, to an extent, like something that was counting down towards. And the idea that there was rescue coming, that there was a way out of Castle Leek coming in 5 days, I thought was important, and it gave this story structure, and it gave it a certain sort of shape, so that you knew that, you know, she's waiting for something. She's not just walking around this castle not thinking about how to get home.
Yeah.
She actually has a way out, and she's just waiting those 5 days to get back to it. So that's why we added that whole story. And now you get to repeat the whole entry into the apothecary that you saw in episode 1.
It's really interesting for me, you know, working on the show as somebody who's read the book so many times, that I think I know it by heart, but after a while, I start to see it. I watch the show, and I go, wait, was that in the book? I don't remember anymore, because the two have blended so beautifully.
Like this in the book, this happens much earlier.
Yeah.
This is one of the first things that happens. Colin takes her down and says, hey, why don't you be the healer for us?
It's not really the first.
No, not the first, but it's earlier than it is you know, in the show. But it felt right that at the end of this episode... That, you know,
that's
when at the same time that you've taken away her escape, Colm has said, I want you to do this.
You see how much texture that, you know, you also have to think of scenes like paintings from a visual sense. And when she's got, that's so great, when she has that fur around her neck and the blue velvet against those walls, the textures are fantastic.
This is a gorgeous set.
Yeah.
Really well set.
Really
decked.
Beautiful.
Really well. The production design, the art decoration, the props.
Set
decoration. The whole thing of this is just really great. She did in the script, and we did shoot her reading from the medical journal, and I quoted the book at length, but it was just too much, and I cut it in editing. This is also where you see Colm's teeth for the first time mm-hmm. in the show. You know, at the beginning, he's just this affable guy, and he seems interested. He's questioning her, and he's sharp, and he's wondering. But this is where you really, you know, where he really brings the hammer down. And it's like one of the first times you hear a little tremor in Claire's voice.
Yeah, because she feels like she's about to get trapped.
She's frightened, and yet she's not afraid of him.
Well, she's one of those women that when she gets scared, look at her at the gulp, she gets, her chin goes up and she yeah. looks you right in the eye and doesn't want you to know she's scared. It's like, our daughter's like that. She's like, yeah. you know, she that's gets like, mad, she just puts her chin up and you can see the tears in her eyes, but...
It's, I mean, Kat's so good at playing this role. I mean, it's just, she is Claire.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You mean as your prisoner, don't you?
I love this moment. I mean, you know,
up at the top
when
of the
that door shuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, just the look back of him and Doogie yeah. at the top of the stairs.
You think you're leaving?
Right
look
there.
At them.
The brothers.
Yeah, the brothers. Yep.
You thought Doogie was your problem.
Yeah.
you know?
yep, click.
Click. And it's really nice. It's a nice choice that John and Kat made here as she goes back down the stairs and she just starts to lose it a little bit. Like, it does come crashing down on her in a real way. But she doesn't completely break down, but it just starts to hit her.
Well, it does take you back to that, you know, I love that it keeps bringing you back to that question of what would I do if that were me?
Yeah.
And... You know, here she is. She can't let on.
Yeah, she didn't want to show that to Colm.
Yeah. Oh. It's over?
And that's the show. That's another episode of our little show, dear.
Our little show.
Our little show.
Ridiculous.
Yep. There you have it. 102, Castle Leek. And next week we will have 103.
Aw, there's my team.
There's your team.
Aww.
Well,
shout out to my team.
Which are great.
Yes.
Thank you all for joining us. And this
thank
is Ronald
you.
D. Moore.
Kulon left.
And Kulon's bored.
He's gone. He's
and
not bored.
Terry Dresbach.
Yes.
Thank you all. And we will talk to you again soon.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.